From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Richard Koch, the 15th governor of Texas, a pivotal and controversial figure in post-Civil War Texas. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Unless you've made a deliberate study of Texas history, then you probably don't recognize the name Governor Richard Koch. And if you do, then you likely know he has a dark legacy closely tied to the end of Reconstruction in Texas and the establishment of white supremacy policies that laid the groundwork for the Jim Crow era. That view is accurate, but how harsh should we be in judging Koch? He was an influential white supremacist. He was a former slave owner. He was an advocate for Texas secession from the Union in order to preserve slavery. He fought in the Confederate Army to prevent the end of slavery in Texas. So it is rather easy to cast Koch and the lot of the immoral, if not outright evil, actors in our history. But we can argue that he was a product of his time. But there were other men at that time who did not share those views, even in Texas. So not only was he morally wrong, but he was also strategically wrong because the Confederacy lost and Texas, along with the other southern states, were economically devastated, and it would take generations for them to recover from that unnecessary civil war that men like Koch made necessary. Richard Koch is seen as a central figure in the Redeemer movement, which aimed to restore white dominance in Southern politics after the Civil War. The Redeemers often relied on violence, voter suppression, and intimidation to achieve their aims. And this was a time which white Southern Democrats regained control from Reconstruction governments and reasserted the white racial hierarchy. While Koch's supporters view him as a stabilizer and the protector of Texan independence, modern historians largely criticize him for allowing racial oppression and regressive policies. But Governor Richard Koch is celebrated in some circles for stabilizing Texas after the devastation of the Civil War and leading after Reconstruction, which was hated by the majority of white Texans who had all the political power. Koch oversaw the drafting and ratification of the Texas Constitution of 1876, which remains the state's governing document today. Because of the state's experiences with Koch's predecessor, Governor Edmund Davis, this constitution significantly limits the power of the governor and centralizes control in the hands of the legislature, aligning with the principles of small government popular among Texans, and created a state Supreme Court which was directly elected by the voters. Koch is often portrayed as a fierce defender of states' rights and a harsh critic of federal intervention, which is a stance that resonated with many Texans during and after Reconstruction, and it's here even today. But historians widely criticize Koch for dismantling the progress made during Reconstruction, particularly regarding the protection of civil rights for formerly enslaved black Texans. His election was marked by violent suppression of black voters and Republicans, and his administration systematically eroded their political and social rights. Also, while Jim Crow laws were not fully codified until after his tenure, Koch's policies and governance set the stage for institutionalized racial segregation and disenfranchisement in Texas. His administration prioritized white supremacy and the disenfranchisement of black citizens. It does help to contextualize Koch by looking at the 14th governor of Texas, his predecessor, Republican Edmund J. Davis. While he was focused on expanding railroads in Texas and he was a supporter of public education, the radical Republican Davis also used his office to increase his power as governor. Davis passed a mandatory participation in the militia law, and he created a state police force, increased taxes, and grew the state's debt. Many of these policies were extremely unpopular. Tempers were hot during the 1872 gubernatorial election between Koch and Davis, and there were widespread reports of violence and intimidation against black voters and Republican voters. and so Koch won with a victory margin of 2-1 over Davis. So what do we do with a historical figure like Governor Richard Koch? History is more than a record of triumphs with a cast of characters who are complex and who don't fit into the categories of hero or villain. And even if they do, what do we make of that? These were some of the darkest chapters in Texas history. Remembering figures like Governor Richard Koch and his legacy forces us to confront uncomfortable truths about racism, oppression, and systematic violence that are all part of Texas. Koch became governor in 1874. He used his power to entrench white supremacy in Texas. His administration dismantled Reconstruction-era progress, stripping voting rights from African Americans and suppressing their freedoms. Koch's policies targeted Mexican Americans, systematically dispossessing them of their land in South Texas. He also ordered violent campaigns against Native American populations, furthering their displacement and destruction. Why then should we remember someone like Koch? Because ignoring his legacy does not erase the harm that he caused. It perpetuates it. Understanding figures like Koch provides crucial context for the inequities that persist in Texas today. His policies laid the groundwork for systematic racism, economic disparity, and cultural erasure that marginalized communities continue to navigate. Rosser Newton has written a book about Richard Koch. It's called Richard Koch, Texan. Newton is a descendant of the former governor.
He's a great, great, great uncle.
Did you grow up knowing that? Like you come from the stock of Richard Koch?
Well, all his children died. And so my family in Dallas is descended from one of his relatives who came to Dallas from Williamsburg, Virginia, after the Civil War.
And so when you were a kid, though, were there stories told? Was this something, or did you discover your connection to Governor Koch late in life?
It was always something that we talked about at family reunions and dinners. But there was never any single place where I could go to find out about who this man was.
People who have an understanding of Texas history, although they may not be experts in it, they will know that Richard Koch was the first governor of Texas after Reconstruction. That seems to be the blip line for, like, who was Governor Richard Koch? You say he would be the first governor after Reconstruction. That seems to be the main thing, right?
Right.
And some would see him as a kind of a controversial figure in that regard.
Well, it was certainly that's the case, and we knew that when we began the project. It was a fascinating research project on him, but certainly he is viewed controversially in some respects.
Did you see writing this biography? Were you trying to rehabilitate his image, or?
No, not at all. We wrote this to be factual, and put everything out there. Our view was that if we put the facts out there, and it sparks a further discussion, particularly about some of the controversial aspects, all to the good and better for it.
Okay. So some of the facts as we know them about Richard Koch is he was a slaveholder who was in favor of Texas secession. He fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War, and he was an unavowed white supremacist. Are those facts in dispute?
He was certainly all of those. I mean, he certainly was a slaveholder on a plantation south of Waco. He certainly voted for secession at the secession convention. We found less evidence about the white supremacist claim in our research, but certainly that's out there.
Well, there are quotes of him, and we don't know now. We don't have it on tape. All we have are attributions of him saying things about the superiority of the white race. And
absolutely.
And he also adopted policies when he was governor that would follow that philosophy. But, you know, you have to wonder about thinking about things in the terms of their times and of the people right. who were in that place. And so there's a lot to be learned by working through the life of someone like Governor Richard Koch, trying to take a step back from judgments that we have today based upon our acknowledgement today that white supremacy is a bad thing and that we should have multiracial democracy. That's a good thing. So we should, you know, but we can still say, okay, but in that time, in that power structure, there are people like Richard Koch who, you know, they were elected the predominant expression of the population at the time, which was mainly white, the ones who had power of the vote. This is what they voted for, and this is what they got.
Right.
So in your storytelling of the story of Richard Koch, you do seem to present him as a man with principles that he would stick to, that he was a man of, as you saw it, as a man of integrity.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. What we uncovered was that, we thought he was a man of integrity within the context of his times. Notwithstanding some of the things that you brought up earlier about white supremacy and all that, we still thought there was a great history to uncover here. You know, we've all had to reconcile our ancestors' history and recognize that some of those acts are outside of today's values. In that context, I think we honor Koch's contributions to Texas from a service standpoint, both politically and as a public official, knowing that many of the values that he and other great figures in our history held are just not values that we uphold today. But from a political standpoint, we thought he did a good job of ending Reconstruction and repositioning democracy in Texas.
So when you say repositioning democracy in Texas, it wasn't multiracial democracy. It was democracy for white men.
Well, the Constitution that was promulgated under his governorship is the same Constitution that we use today, and it provides for equal protection, for all men and women.
But who had access to the vote?
Well, everybody. I mean, after the Civil War, everybody, all men, had access to the vote following 1873.
But during his tenure as governor, Texas adopted the white-only primary system. Also, we had a poll tax, and there was a aggressive thuggery happening at the polls to prevent certain people from voting who were formerly enslaved.
Right. I think it was a very difficult time post-Reconstruction. Certainly it took time for the improved lot to adhere. And, just like today, in our voting, there are county officials or local officials that the governor does not have direct control over. By and large, the Constitution that he set forth during his tenure was continued, and with a lot of amendments, it's the one that we use today.
Certainly, but characterizing his major accomplishment, as you have it in the book, that he restored democracy in Texas, because prior to him, the state of Texas was basically under military rule because of Reconstruction. It was, you know, different and was much hated. And it was, you know, the Republican rule of that time. Okay, let's not confuse our labels. But the Republican rule at that time was basically despised by Texans because they saw that as basically the Yankees running the state with the military. And then when the democracy, when elections were restored the first time for governor, Richard Koch was elected. And we can get into all the shenanigans that happened with Davis and all that as well. That's a great story. We want to get into all that. But, you know, but to say he restored democracy in Texas, I mean, that's generous. I mean, it's more like he restored some form of flawed democracy or an oppressive democracy into Texas. Would be more fair.
I think you can characterize it that way. A good example of that was his repeal of the Militia Act that was promulgated during the Davis governorship, whereby the governor basically was in control of militia at the county level, and he had the right to replace county officials on a fiat basis. You know, it's really those kind of restorations of local control that we're talking about.
Edmund Davis had this power, which he used to try to hang on to the governor's office, and it didn't go well. But there were still problems in that election. So let's get into that election. So according to the state constitution that was at that time, Texas was supposed to have a 4-day election, but instead it was a 1-day election. Whether or not that was improper was up to the state Supreme Court to interpret. Something about a semicolon came into play, but still, Koch beat Edmund by 2-1 at the polls. But can you talk about this issue?
There was a question about whether the polls were open for the prescribed period of time, and I believe it came out of Harris County. But anyway, Davis lost the vote about 2-1, and he and his supporters used a legal challenge based on that. To try to keep the election from being certified, and ultimately they failed, and when they did, the Democrats, led by presumptive Governor Koch at that time, went to take the state house,
right? Because Governor Edmund Davis refusing to leave, he was refusing to leave the governor's office.
That's right. And he had telegrammed President Grant in Washington that the Southerners were rebelling and that Grant should send federal troops. President Grant refused and Davis decamped shortly thereafter.
Well, decamped, but not willingly. There was still, wasn't there some, they had to find a way into the office to get him out.
Absolutely. They entered the state house, at night, and swore in the House of Representatives and the Senate. And then they certified the election for governor. And meanwhile, Davis was in the governor's office with armed militia at the door, refusing to leave. And there were some very tense moments. But fortunately for Texas, peace prevailed and Davis ultimately left. And there was no gunshots fired.
Still a dramatic scene.
Yeah, no, it was tough. And, it's interesting to consider what might have happened, had it gone the other direction and there had been a gunfight. So, it's good for democracy and it's good for peace. that that did not happen, and there was a peaceful transfer of power.
Okay, yeah, a rough peaceful transfer of power. Yes, not ideal.
Yeah, he had had a different trajectory to the governorship. He had been a brigadier general in the Union Army during the Civil War, and was actually on board the United States naval vessel off the coast of Texas, where the Confederate Army in Texas surrendered, and he accepted their surrender. So he was not popular in Texas.
He was widely hated. Yes. And much of that has to do also with some of the rumors and the messaging that was put out at the time in local newspapers writing about him in very disparaging ways.
Yeah, it was a tough exit for him.
So now we have Governor Koch in office, and what are his priorities? What does he do? I mean, because the state is in shambles.
It's a mess. The state's broke. It does not have access to the bond market. It's got county officials who are not sure if they're going to be in office or out of office. It's an absolute mess.
The frontier is the Badlands. We have the Native Americans that have reclaimed land that was basically unprotected during the Civil War, and the state of Texas wants to reclaim that land from the Native tribes.
Right. You had Native American raids on the western frontier. You had pretty basic banditry. I mean, it was a no man's land, and Koch took action pretty quickly to send Texas Rangers and other militia out there to try to get a hold of what was going on. You know, this is a big issue for Texas because it was widely cited as one of the reasons that Texas decided to join the Union. And so, getting a handle on that was pretty important.
Koch was still the man that he always was. Even back in his days at William & Mary, he was pro-slavery. You know, he was a white supremacist. Those were the attitudes that he grew up with. So do those attitudes, now that he is governor, how does that enter into his decision making?
Well, we didn't see a lot of evidence of sort of pro-white, anti-minority at work. Most of the things that he accomplished alongside with the legislature were political in nature, and benefited Texans equally. For example, what we just discussed out on the frontier. But there was also his old saying, pay what we owe, pay as we go, and he was able to get the state's finances in order by the time he left office. And I believe that they were actually able to do a bond financing shortly after his tenure ended and he went to the United States Senate.
One of his priorities was ensuring the safety along the Texas-Mexico border.
Yeah.
Something that our current governor is still working on.
Absolutely. And it's been a big issue for Texas. It was cited as one of the reasons that Texas joined the Union. It's always been an issue. And, he made some big strides there.
So also during his term, we had the adoption of the Texas Constitution of 1876. And this is the Constitution which we basically still have in Texas, although it's been amended so much it's hard to recognize it. But there are some parts of it that we still cite, particularly the part about public education. that the state of Texas has an obligation to do that. He also worked on the opening of the Agricultural and Mechanical College of Texas.
Texas A&M.
Which is now Texas A&M. What do you want people to know about Governor Koch?
He was an interesting figure in the post-Reconstruction history in Texas. He took great strides towards restoring democracy, and I call it democracy, where elected officials do not have fiat and private militia. Getting rid of that enables people to have local elections and have them stick. I think those are important things to know about him. I think also that, his life shows that, freedom does not come free. It takes a lot of work and a lot of perseverance to keep people free. So,
yeah, but he was working only the concern about the freedom of a certain portion of the population.
Well, after the Civil War, the things that he did benefited everybody. Certainly before the Civil War was over and determined, he was part of the slaveholding class, and he was a secessionist, as we've discussed. But afterwards, the work that he did benefited everybody.
And so we should see him as having a mixed record, someone who, though, worked for bringing stability and order to Texas at a time when that was really not in existence. But when you say over time, the rights of voting and inclusion for the formerly enslaved and their descendants, I mean, that took 100 years.
That's, took 100 years, yeah.
That's a lot of time. That's
there's still work to be done.
There's a lot of, yes, you're, I thank you for saying that. All right, so just acknowledge, we shouldn't not talk about these people in Texas history because of these issues. We should look at them and hold them up to the light, but also keep in mind that they were the products of their time. But you can't help but go over this history and see some disturbing similarities to today. Questions Absolutely. About stability, questions about secession, questions about, how do we create a better Texas?
Yeah. And even at the national level, some of the same challenges exist today.
Rosser Newton has written a book about Governor Richard Koch. It's called Richard Koch, Texan. It's published by Stony Creek Publishing Group, part of the Texas Book Consortium, a group of university and small presses located around the state, with support from Texas A&M University Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters episodes on our website at tpr.org, and you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.